This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
In for Kyle Connor, toe drag, scores!
That was beautiful. Get it in cue for the highlight reel.
Couple of Predators collide. Here comes Hayes. Hayes to Kyle Connor, scores! Oh, the sweet hands of Kyle Connor. In for Laine to Kyle Connor, scores! Kyle Connor with the hat trick. Hayes to Laine to Connor to the back of the net. 5-0 Jets.
Rogers lost side of the net out in front for Tyler Seguin. Didn't shoot. Now he will and he scores. Tyler Seguin off the near side post and in. Power play goal for Dallas. And they lead it 3-0.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca, we say good evening, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mindell, Sean Assor, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. We have 2 hours of hockey talk for you. Late nights, Wednesday night. Hope you enjoyed our coverage of the Moose game. They drop a hard-fought defeat in Cedar, in Texas, to the Texas Stars. The Moose falling. They needed that one in their battle to make the playoffs in the Central Division, but alas, they came up one goal short. Much like the Winnipeg Jets on Monday night, they came up not one, not two, but three goals short on Monday night against the Dallas Stars. They followed up their performance on Saturday night against the Predators with a bit of a stinker on Monday on home ice. I say good evening without further ado to Ezra Ginsberg and to Sean Assor. Gentlemen, it's good to see you on this Wednesday evening.
Yeah, good evening, boys. It's good to be here. Another late night show after Moose game. Unfortunately, as you mentioned, Drew, the Moose weren't able to pull it out, even though they were leading late in that third period. But, you know, you mentioned the 5-0 game against the Predators, guys, and I don't think you could have had more of a polar opposite game on Monday night. And Monday night's game, by the way, because we've been having so much hockey, you know, night after night after night, it seems like that game on Monday night was like a week ago. And especially, I thought, in the third period. And sure, the Jets made it a little bit interesting. It was 4-0 Stars, and the Jets pull within two. But coming off of that high, and I really don't believe in the emotional letdown here. I just don't think the Jets played well against Dallas. And you see Dallas tonight, they're up 1-0. I mean, Dallas can really separate themselves, especially from Arizona and Minnesota. I mean, Dallas right now, I mean, they're in a really good spot. I mean, Colorado is in the second wild card spot. Dallas is in the first wild card spot right now. But they have a really good chance if they hang on and beat the Flames tonight. I believe it's still in the second period. And by the time tonight's show is over, we'll know who won the game. But they had a lot more to play for, I thought. But at the end of the day, guys, sometimes you have to just say Dallas was the better team. The first period, I would say, was a wash.
Dallas was the better team in the first period. They had, if it wasn't for Connor Hellebuck, and if it wasn't for, you know, just a couple of missed opportunities, and if it wasn't for Mark Scheifele playing some great goaltending, the Stars had what I counted in that first period, 4 grade A chances. Tyler Seguin had a couple chances that Tyler Seguin doesn't normally miss. And the Jets, I thought, were fortunate to finish the first period tied at 0-0. And then, you know, post-game, when we were talking to a lot of the Stars players and we were talking to Stars coach Jim Montgomery, that was sort of the thing. Mike Heike, who covers the team for the team website, DallasStars.com, he was saying, you know, you play this first 20 minutes against the Jets on Monday night and you have a lot of good opportunities, and the Stars are a team that doesn't score a lot of goals and had been a bit snake bit as of late. So you play that first period and you get a lot of great chances. You don't get one in. You know, were you guys getting, maybe were you gripping your sticks a little tighter? And the players, to a man and to a coach, said, you know, they knew that the chances were there and that they would just have to keep at it with the same game they'd played in the first 20 minutes, and they'd get rewarded, and which is what they did, you know, jumping out to the being up 4-0 after 40 minutes.
Right, and sure, you've got a point there, and, you know, the Stars probably had more scoring chances in the Jets than the Jets did, but the score was still tied, and, you know, obviously the power play was a huge issue for the Jets. The penalty kill, I should say, with the Stars, Tyler Seguin getting the two power play goals, but I mean, guys, I think that when you're looking at the first round, and everyone's going to talk about the fact that the Jets have lost 3 of the 4 games to the Stars, but if they play the way they did going back to Saturday night, and I think that's what's so frustrating with the way the Jets played, because in that game, you could maybe say the Jets had a good half period. Mm-hmm. It really wasn't a good effort for the Jets. Similar, I thought, to the game against the Golden Knights. It wasn't a carbon copy, but similar kind of low energy levels. You know, the Jets only had the four shots mm-hmm. in the third period. They didn't have a lot of those high danger scoring chances that we like to see. I mean, they just didn't play as well as they did against Nashville. And you could say that, well, they played their A-plus game against Nashville. Well, you would like for them to at least have a B game against Dallas, but yeah. It was more of the C game that they had against Dallas. And as I mentioned, you know, you make it a little bit interesting late there in the third period, but when you go four down to one of the best defensive teams, yeah. I mean, Ben Bishop rarely gives up more than a couple of goals. Maybe you'll get three past him, but to expect to come back down four goals.
Worth pointing out about Ben Bishop, Ben Bishop just left the game in Calgary, as we're, you know, it's on here in studio, with what looked like a non-contact knee injury. Ooh. So if Ben Bishop is out of the Stars' net for any long-term period.
Didn't he have knee issues before?
He's had knee issues for the last number of years, lower body issues in March, as Sean Shapiro, who covers the team for TheAthletic.com, tweets about, you know, that Bishop usually gets an injury in March, and that's what happened in Calgary just now. So that's something to keep an eye on, as these two teams, the Jets and the Stars, are likely to meet in the first round of the playoffs. You know, if the Jets end up winning the Central Division, they are most likely first round opponent would be the Dallas Stars. But the Stars, to your point, Ezzy, have played well against the Jets all season long. They've won 3 out of 4 against the Jets.
Mm-hmm. I still think the Jets beat them in a 7-game series, regardless if Ben Bishop is healthy or not. And the injury just happened. I mean, I haven't seen it. You haven't seen it. We have no idea the extent of the injury.
No.
So he could be back next game. He could be out for a week. We just don't know. But yeah, certainly, Drew, if the Dallas Stars don't have Ben Bishop, arguably a Vezina Trophy candidate, mm-hmm. I mean, if I had a vote, I would probably give the Vezina to Andrei Vasilevskiy. But Ben Bishop would certainly be a finalist.
He would definitely be a finalist.
He's been incredible. So, if you don't have Bishop, and you could say that, boys, about a lot of teams. I want to get Sean in here, but you could say that about how many different teams. I mean, maybe the Islanders are the exception with Thomas Greiss and Robin Lehner, right? Both of those goalies have played a similar amount of games, and you pretty much have the 1A, 1B. But there aren't many teams. You look at Vegas, you look at Pittsburgh, you look at Washington. I mean, if Braden Holtby goes out,
yeah,
Phoenix Copley's a good goaltender, but I don't think a lot of people are going to pick the Caps to win the Cup if Phoenix Copley has to play a significant amount of games, right?
There's no question about it. You know, Phoenix Copley is not, you know, Braden Holtby, and Anton Khudobin has not been. I mean, Khudobin's been good this year, but he's not Ben Bishop, you know, to the point of how well Ben Bishop has played this year. So, you know, the Stars need Ben Bishop. Every team needs their number one goaltender. I don't know. Like you said, maybe the Islanders with Lehner and Greiss are the only team that can sort of go without 1A, 1B. But
another team, Drew, that stands out is Boston.
Sure, I mean, Boston. Yeah.
Jaro Halak has been fantastic.
Yeah, but still want
Tuukka Rask. Tuukka Rask is the guy.
Yeah.
And
maybe the Flames, because they anointed Riddick their number one.
They've bounced back and forth between Riddick and Smith, and that's one of the problems that the Flames, or concerns people have about the Flames, entering the postseason.
You definitely want to anoint a number one moving into the postseason. You don't want to have that uncertainty looming over the team, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, you know, the old saying that if you have two number one goaltenders and going into the playoffs, that means you actually don't have a number one goaltender, which is fair. But, I mean, the Jets on Monday night, it's a divisional game. It's an opportunity to get even more space, or to keep that space that you earned on Saturday night by beating the Predators. And what happens? They go out and they absolutely leave a stink bomb. And that's problematic. I mean, you can't sugarcoat that one. And, you know, to your point, Ezzy, you talk about, you know, people are saying, well, it's an emotional letdown. And yeah, the emotion is not going to be as high as it was in the building on Saturday night for obvious reasons.
Well, that's my point. I think it was almost impossible not to have an emotional letdown.
And the players have to prepare for that.
When you're going up against the team that you're battling for first in the Central.
Yes, your chief rival.
Right, you're not going to get as excited, I think, even though none of the Jets, the coaching staff, they're not going to say this. I mean, the Jets get up more for those games against the Predators, against the Golden Knights, against the Lightning. And that's to be expected. So I don't really think an emotional letdown was the issue here. I just don't think they played well. I would say they were flat. And, you know, we've seen the Jets come out flat more than a few times. You think back, I mentioned that Vegas game. You think back, you know, a couple more weeks before that against the Colorado Avalanche when the Avalanche won 7-1. I mean, I'm not concerned at all, guys. I really think the Jets have a great shot at getting to the West Final again. I think it's going to be very difficult for them to get to the Stanley Cup Final just because the Pacific Division's better. So whether they go up against San Jose, Calgary, or Vegas, and it could be any one of those three teams, guys, I just think it's going to, the road to the Stanley Cup is a lot more difficult once you get to the West Final, because I still think the Jets are the best team in the Central by far. Well, I really do. And especially when you look at how the Jets have handled the Predators this season, I really don't think that Predators team is as good as they were last year.
Well, the Jets certainly haven't shown to be playing that well, probably since January. Now, you can account for the injuries to Dustin Byfuglien and more recently to Josh Morrissey, which leads us to the talk about Byfuglien. He was in the regular colored jersey at Jets practice today. They say he's not going to play tomorrow against the Islanders, but we've seen stranger things happen before where a guy coming off the IR wasn't going to play and then he ended up getting into the lineup.
And we've heard many times that Byfuglien doesn't need a lot of prep time to get back into a game. He can just, once he's ready, they can just throw him right into
the
lineup.
It's pretty clear, though, that if he doesn't play tomorrow, he's playing on Saturday against the Montreal Canadiens.
And I'd be shocked if he doesn't get into that game Saturday. And I agree with Shawnee.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be shocked if doesn't play on Thursday night. I mean, Maurice said today after practice
that
Buff isn't playing, but that doesn't mean that the chances are zero. It's probably something like 20-80
right
Ehlers. Now.
It was the same thing with Ehlers. When he was coming off his shoulder injury, Ehlers talked his way back into the lineup, if you remember, and then, contributed to the Jets. That was that game in Vegas, I think, the Jets won.
He scored
his first shift back from injury. So it's not impossible for Byfuglien to play tomorrow. I wouldn't expect it, but it's not impossible. And if he does get back in the lineup, first of all, it's a huge addition to the Jets' power play, which has not been the well-oiled machine that we're used to seeing. And then, we talk about the emotion. Well, what does Dustin Byfuglien bring on the ice more than anything? Emotion. I mean, he brings physicality and he brings, a fearlessness to his game, but he's always emotionally involved and he always gets his team going with, maybe he'll take two guys off of a scrum and, twirl them on the top of his finger. Whatever it is, you don't see very many emotionless games from the Jets when Byfuglien's in the lineup. I think the team is desperately looking for his injection of fun and energy back into the lineup.
Yeah, it's definitely an emotional boost, but at the end of the day, really, it just comes down to you want Buff to get some games in before the first round, right? So he's going to get in, five or six games. It looks like it's going to be five. And that's what you want. Unfortunately, Josh Morrissey, it looks like, isn't going to get any regular season games in. And if he does, it's not going to be a lot.
He skated
one or two, maybe at most, but it doesn't look like that.
Morrissey and Brossois skated before the Jets' regular practice today, so he's on the ice, which is a good sign. But you're right, Ezzy. You're looking at a Morrissey return more than likely for maybe game one of the playoffs, if that.
Right, and I think he'll be fine, by the way. I'm not trying to say that I'm worried about Morrissey because he's the Jets' best defenseman, and he's a veteran at this point in his career. Even though he's still in his early 20s, I think he's going to be fine. I think he could step right into the lineup, game one versus whoever it is, and he'll be fine. I just think at the end of the day, for Morrissey and Paul Maurice and the Jets coaching staff, ideally they would like him to play, more than one or two games.
They'd love to see him play that last game in Arizona, not this coming Saturday, but a week from Saturday, just to get one regular season game under his belt before the playoffs begin.
Just a little mental, I don't want to say well-being, but a little reassurance that, the injury is healed. You can take those licks along the wall. A big part of Josh Morrissey's game is retrieving pucks along the wall. If you're dealing with a nagging ailment in the upper body region, I mean, that can get re-injured in a real hurry. So just the mental mind frame, the state of mind that he's ready to go healthy, I think that's huge as we enter the most important part of the year.
Absolutely. The playoffs are, the playoffs do start 2 weeks from today. We obviously don't know.
That's crazy.
When the Jets will open the playoffs, but you can hear it live here on TSN Radio 1290. It was a good Saturday night for the Jets. It was a bad Monday night. We'll keep an eye on what's happening with Ben Bishop. The injury, we just saw it. It doesn't look good.
Pushed off from his left to his right, and instantly grabs the left leg.
Mm-hmm.
bends over, keeled over, looked like potential knee.
Yeah.
I mean, for a guy who's 6'7" with multiple lower body injuries already,
it looks like a very, you know, it looks very dangerous if you're a fan of the Dallas Stars.
Matt Zuccarello collide with Tyler Seguin at practice today also?
Oh, God. We're trying to come back from a broken hand and running into Tyler Seguin.
Head on.
Oh, boy. Anyways, I'm sure we won't get an update before the show's over, but you can stay tuned to the station and hear the latest on Ben Bishop and, of course, the Winnipeg Jets. When we return, we'll talk about Drew Doughty. He had some great comments earlier this week, not letting up on Matthew Tkachuk, not letting up on Brent Burns and Erik Karlsson. That's up next. You're listening to a Wednesday edition of NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
Tkachuk in the middle of things, as he often is.
There is the elbow right to the head.
Drew Doughty afterwards was quoted as saying, Tkachuk is a pretty dirty player.
He elbows Drew right in the face. You can't expect us to not do anything about it.
It's something that happened in the past, and it's done with it, and you move forward.
He sees Tkachuk here. He's going to go after him, give him a pretty hearty cross check. Tkachuk continues to be in the middle of things. He's across the line. He gets rocked at center ice with a big hit by Matthew Tkachuk, and that'll draw a reaction.
That's the type of incident that will carry on for years between Doughty's teams and Tkachuk's teams.
Wednesday evening, welcome back to NHL This Week. Drew Doughty, unplugged, unfiltered earlier, went off on Matthew Tkachuk earlier this week. It was an entertaining set of comments from the LA Kings defenseman. Welcome back to the program. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290 Wednesday evening. Drew Mundell, Sean Asor, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. This segment of the show brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the whole family. To make an appointment today, visit Linden Market Dental Center.
Drew, let me tell you, you're going to have to go see Les.
If I keep eating these wine gums?
If you keep eating those wine gums.
Yeah, I know. I have a weak spot for wine gums.
Oh, they're one of my favorites.
Well, I've been hoarding them over here from you.
Chipmunk cheeks are chewing away on those wine gums. And that's not a little bag either.
No, I have a weakness for wine gums.
I saw you stuff at least 6 or 7 during the commercial break into your pie hole.
I don't think that's completely accurate, but I do admittedly, I wish I had some pie. I do admittedly have a weakness for some wine gums, so you are correct in calling me out on that.
When you buy wine gums, though, and they're hard.
Well, you just don't.
I kind of like the good chew.
It depends if they're hard or if they're chewy. I think there's a difference between the two. These ones are actually quite fresh. I'll pass them over to you, Sean.
I'm a sucker for sour soothers.
Mm, yeah, sour soothers are good. They're a little too sugary for me, though. These wine gums apparently are. I'm not going to say they're sugar free because they certainly aren't. No. But in my brain, I like to give myself that sort of excuse.
Organic wine gums.
I find it interesting, though, that you picked up the 7-Eleven brand and not the Maynard's brand.
I don't like the Maynard's brand. I prefer the 7-Eleven brand.
It's because sometimes they're hard.
The Maynard's can be, the 7-Eleven brand I find are more fresh than the Maynard's brand. You're right.
And it's really tough to know if you're getting a batch of hard ones because even if you squeeze them in the store.
It's the candy lotto. You never know what you're going to get.
It really is. You're spinning the wheel.
It's almost like we shouldn't be buying these confectionery products on a regular basis.
Oh, that's blasphemous. Don't say that.
I apologize.
We're gonna eat apples?
I apologize, but I'll tell you one person who's not apologizing. That is Drew Doughty. Here's the quote he had.
Best comments ever.
That's amazing.
After an otherwise quiet morning skate, Drew Doughty was asked simply if he thought his rivalry with Matthew Tkachuk was a healthy one. Oh, no. No respect for him. None. I respect everyone else. I'll never talk to him off the ice. It's happened many times every game since he's been in the league. That's his role. That's how he likes to play. That's fine. I have no issue with it. But when he crosses the line, I lose respect for him for sure. I mean, Drew Doughty does not like Matthew Tkachuk. And I think Matthew Tkachuk is sitting back. And sure, they lost that game to the Kings. Obviously, the Kings were a little motivated when they played on Monday night. But I think Matthew Tkachuk is sitting back and laughing his behind off that he's living, as they say, as the kids say nowadays, rent-free in Drew Doughty's head.
Drew Doughty likes Matthew Tkachuk about as much as Donald Trump likes Hillary Clinton.
Well, he wasn't leading him in a locker-up chant, but you're not too far off, I think.
It's unbelievable because you just don't hear hockey players say these types of things very often. Once in a while, you hear a player go off, But Drew Doughty, Norris Trophy winner, two-time Stanley Cup champion, in my opinion, still one of the best defensemen, if not the best defenseman. And I think you're hearing
just
a player.
Just ask him.
Yeah, we'll talk about the defensive rankings coming up.
Well,
in a second.
I thought the comments Drew about Brent Burns were more surprising because this is a guy who he played with on Team Canada.
Well, start with the Tkachuk comments, and then we'll get to the Burns comments.
I'm not surprised because they hate each other. Mm-hmm. So why would you be surprised that Doughty said that? When these two guys have a storied history, I mean, everybody knows they've fought. They don't like each other. They've had epic battles on the ice. And I thought it was funny that the Kings beat the Flames when the Flames are leading the Pacific Division. They've locked it up. I mean, they haven't clinched the division, but San Jose's not catching them. And LA is the worst team in the league. And it was just funny that LA completely just spoiled their night.
They played for Drew Doughty. The Kings definitely played for Drew Doughty. They said, okay.
Well, they weren't playing for Ilya Kovalchuk.
Well, he's still.
Is Ilya Kovalchuk playing for Ilya Kovalchuk?
No, Ilya Kovalchuk's back in Los Angeles.
Yeah. Who is Kovalchuk playing for?
He was playing for that ice cream cone. Did you see on Instagram? He went out for ice cream with his kids. It looked like a nice little family outing rather than playing in the hockey
Drew,
game.
You could go back to our preseason show when we all said.
Yeah.
We don't expect much out of Ilya Kovalchuk, and they gave him $6 million a year, not for 1 year, not for 2 years, but for 3 years. And now here we are.
Not once, not twice, but thrice.
Well, the Kings are the worst team in the league, and Kovalchuk has been a healthy scratch.
Yeah, but and he's still, I think, something like either third or fourth on the team in points with like 30. I mean, it's a bad year in Los Angeles, but Drew Doughty unplugged is tremendous for us and it's tremendous for the league because you don't often hear players speak this candidly. Here's what he had to say about Brent Burns and Erik Karlsson and sort of defensemen around the NHL. Doughty prefaced his remarks by saying he doesn't judge the performance of defensemen on the basis of points the way you guys do. I watch the games. I watch how they play. I watch Brent Burns get beat 20 times a game. That's how I base it. And I like how Gio, that's Mark Giordano of the Calgary Flames, and I like how Gio plays. I've got tons of respect for Gio. He plays the game the right way. He plays the game at both ends of the ice. He's on the power play. He blocks shots. He's a first PK guy. You don't see that from Burns or Erik Karlsson. They're not first PK guys. They're amazing as offensive guys. None of us are close to them there. We don't have the offensive upside, but they don't have even close to our defensive upside. So I would want Mark Giordano on my team before those guys.
Right, and again, it's not surprising that he's saying that. I guess what's most surprising is that he's saying that about a guy that you think that he would have a relationship with off the ice, right? And by the way, we've talked about this before. We've been doing the show for 10 years, and the Norris Trophy often goes to the defenseman with the most points or, you know, the finalist or at the very least top 10 in defenseman scoring. It's not always 1, 2, 3, but Brent Burns isn't the best defensive defenseman in the game. He is the best offensive defenseman, but if you're asking me who the best all-around defenseman is, I don't even know if Brent Burns is in the top three. I think Victor Hedman and Seth Jones, and I would put Chris Letang up there as well. Obviously, you know, Brent Burns is a serious candidate for the Norris Trophy, but it's not just about the Norris Trophy.
Victor Hedman.
I mean, what's surprising is that Drew Doughty kind of just decided to go off on not just one player, but a couple of players, with the other one being Brent Burns, the one that you're surprised about, because he was about to play the Calgary Flames. He was about to face Matthew Tkachuk. It's understandable why he goes off a little bit on Tkachuk, but I don't know why he went off on Brent Burns.
You're right, because take those comments that I just made, and you just take the part out about Brent Burns and about Erik Karlsson. They have the question is more or less about Mark Giordano. Eric DeHatchick was the one who wrote the article for The Athletic, and he's the one who asked the question. And the question's about, you know, Mark Giordano and the great career he's had and how it's been a bit of an up-and-down career, and he had to go to the KHL before he came back to the NHL, and he found himself and developed into this top-flight defenseman. So you just talk about Mark Giordano. It's Doughty who sort of goes off on the tangent to insult Burns and Karlsson.
Are we seeing a little bit of a sore loser now?
Or there's no question.
Is there some poutiness to this, you think?
Or I think you are.
Is this a guy that just expects to win all the time and he doesn't really know how to place his anger and his aggression when he's not getting the results he wants?
He's furious at the season the LA Kings have had. And we saw that game against the Kings last Monday? Mm-hmm. I mean, that was an awful hockey game. And Drew Doughty couldn't have cared less to play in that hockey game. I mean, he was not a factor. He did not want to be there. Nothing about that game was interesting to him. This is a guy who expects to compete for the Stanley Cup year in and year out, because that's what the Kings did you know, not in the last couple of years, but in the years before that. You know, early on in the 2010, 2012, the Kings were competing for Stanley Cups and playing an epic series against the Chicago Blackhawks. And now they see him running out the stretch of the season that's a completely lost year with Willie Desjardins behind the bench, another guy who has mailed it in since he became their interim head coach.
Well, I don't know if he's mailed it in. I think the team has mailed it in.
Well, I don't know.
He came in into a situation where, I mean, what's the best he's going to do? Maybe they're going to go on a 4 or 5 game winning streak. I mean, when he took over, I mean, they had no chance at making the playoffs. But I agree with you, Drew. I'm going to call offside on Drew Doughty. And you know, I'm one of the biggest Doughty fans there are. I think what he said about Tkachuk, I love. I'm going to clarify that. I love those comments because that's just a hockey player who is being honest and he is telling you how much he dislikes another hockey player. And I, by the way, also really like Matthew Tkachuk. So, I mean, I'm not saying that I don't like Tkachuk, but he's telling you the honest truth. I mean, he doesn't like Tkachuk. When it comes to Burns, I think what he said was a little bit off base. I mean, I really think that he went a little bit too far because even though Burns isn't the greatest defensive defenseman, and he's been known to cough up the puck, and he's been known to have the odd defensive lapse, you're still talking about a Norris Trophy winner. He's still one of the best defensemen.
He's still a defenseman who can play for every other team in the NHL, yes. No questions asked. Anyways, I appreciate you, Doughty, at least giving us this segment worth of topic and
love
conversation.
Love the trash talk segment.
Exactly. When we come back, Josh Cooper of TheAthletic.com is going to join us, probably touch on these comments by Doughty, covers the team in Los Angeles and in Anaheim as well. You're listening to NHL This Week. It's Wednesday evening. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Wednesday evening. Welcome back to NHL This Week. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290, trying to get Josh Cooper on the line. In the meantime, you can reach us here in studio at Illegal Curve is the best way to do it via Twitter. And of course, if you want to do it via text message, send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply, but we may very well read your text on air if we like it enough.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From TheAthletic.com, he covers the LA Kings, he covers the Anaheim Ducks, he's one of our very closest friends. Josh Cooper joins us on the program. Joshua, you guys obviously both have strong opinions on The Bachelor. Another person who's got some strong opinions on hockey players is Drew Doughty of the Los Angeles Kings. Josh, I'm sure you saw the comments Eric Dehatchik, you know, wrote about them for TheAthletic.com earlier this week. You covered the Kings, you covered Drew Doughty. What were your thoughts on his comments about Matthew Tkachuk and maybe more interestingly, his comments about Brent Burns and Erik Karlsson?
I actually loved them. I thought it was great. The reason why is because you don't get enough of that in this league. All you get are just guys who are just going to praise everyone and call everyone great. The amount of times I hear the word great used in, I guess, the same sentence as a player who is very much not great, just like it's like a drinking game almost. Like you just never ever get anyone who isn't great. You never get anything that isn't a vanilla answer. And Drew Doughty sometimes will go there. And I mean, look, like I don't play the game at his level. So when he's seeing Brent Burns and Erik Karlsson getting beat defensively, I don't see that as often as he does. But he's ice level and he can obviously see this more than me. He doesn't respect Matthew Tkachuk. For obvious reasons that stem back to, I guess, Tkachuk's rookie year when he took a run at Drew Doughty. And it just has kind of boiled over since then. So I have no problems with him saying that. I mean, look, you see these types of things said in the NBA all the time. And MLB, too, for that matter. I mean, you have it's said in a lot of sports leagues. For whatever reason, trash talk is taboo in hockey and the media. But I would like to see more of it.
Josh, the Kings are currently on a 3-game Western Canadian road trip. Ilya Kovalchuk is not on the road trip. And, you know, we know that he's struggled this year. He hasn't put up the offensive numbers that I think he would like and the Kings would like. But the question I have for you is, does he still have a future with the Kings based on how badly this season has gone?
Yes, because he's going to have a different coach next year, probably. Very unlikely it's going to be Willie Desjardins. I think more shocking thing is why nobody's stepped in yet on this. I mean, it's clearly just an absolute gong show of a situation. And I mean, just no one has kind of gone to Willie DeJardin and been like, hey, dude, like, why don't you play this guy? We're paying him a lot of money. So, or at least going to Kovalchuk, and or, I don't even know if you really go to Kovalchuk in this situation, but it's a mess. There's no question about it. And I think the only cause for hope for him for next season with the Kings is that it seems more than likely that there's going to be a new coach, and it's not going to be Willie DeJardin making some really weird, curious lineup decisions. And, you know, I think that that's really why things will probably work out for him.
You're listening.
Potentially in the future in L.A., potentially. I mean, maybe they end up trading him as they try to rebuild, but I think that's the only cause for hope in L.A.
You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. Our guest is Josh Cooper of TheAthletic.com.
Yeah, Josh, it's interesting. I look at the comments that Drew Doughty made about specifically Brent Burns and Erik Karlsson, and, you know, like you were saying, he's warranted. He's allowed to make those comments as an elite defender in the league. But I'm just curious as if it was perhaps a Freudian slip of just the way, you know, hit the Kings, and maybe the NHL looks at those two guys that maybe they're not the greatest defensive defenseman, and, you know, he maybe aired out some dirty laundry that the rest of the league was maybe thinking.
Oh, yeah. I mean, players talk all the time, and I think it's no secret that those two guys are not the best defenders in the league. You know, I think the way the league is looked at and the way it's scored right now is just basically saying, if you are playing in your zone more than, or playing in the opposition zone more than your own zone, then that means that you're good defensively to a degree, just because the best defense is a good offense. And in that case, those guys are very good defensively. However, if you put them in their own zone, maybe they're not quite as good. I think Karlsson has improved immensely. Burns, he's at least pretty big and physical, but I think maybe more of it just kind of stems from the fact that Drew Doughty plays every single situation and is going to, probably considering the success of the Kings, end up probably with one Norris Trophy. Whereas you have Erik Karlsson as two, and Brent Burns is probably going to get a second this year.
Josh Cooper's our guest on NHL This Week. We're talking about the LA Kings and the Anaheim Ducks and the lost seasons in Southern California. Josh, you mentioned Willie DeJardin, and he's likely to not come back as the Kings head coach next season. Todd McClellan or bust, in your opinion, or do you think that there could be a dark horse candidate?
Well, Pierre LeBrun from The Athletic reported today that it was Todd McClellan was the front runner. So, I mean, he's a quote machine. I'd love to have him. But, yeah, he's a guy who I think would be a good fit. I mean, one person whose name, for whatever reason, hasn't been thrown out there in a few years, Lane Lambert, who's an assistant coach of the New York Islanders, who's been Barry Trotz's head assistant for a number of years. I mean, you want to hire guys who learn from the best, and someone who, in my opinion, has learned from the best coach in the NHL, who is Barry Trotz. So, overall, I think it is Todd McClellan, but and there are some other names out there, but I'm just throwing Lane's name out there just because I don't understand why people don't ever seem to bring him up, considering the fact that he now has won a Stanley Cup.
Josh, the Ducks and the Kings are last and second last in the Western Conference, and I think you'd agree that a total rebuild is not in the cards for either of these two teams. So having said that, which two of these teams do you think is going to turn it around quicker and get back into the playoffs?
The Ducks, they just seem to have better prospects. The Kings prospects just aren't, I mean, just because Gabe Vilardi's hurt, don't seem to be quite as good. But if he ends up rehabbing his back and gets on track for next season, then that changes. But right now, I'd have to say the Ducks, just because I really like their prospects. And look, Sam Steele hat trick last night. So, you know, I think the Ducks are in much better shape than the Kings right now.
Josh, I'm curious. You know, you wrote a really, really great article about how Ben Lovejoy is going to be pledging his brain to concussion research once he passes later down the road. And I'm just curious, you know, that's such an important topic, especially to breach right around now. What stood out to you the most when you were putting this article together?
Well, I mean, honestly, the reason why he decided to was because of an article I had written for another publication a year earlier. Or I guess it was 2 years, one or 2 years earlier.
Time flies.
Yeah. I'm sorry, what?
I said time flies.
Yeah, boy, especially when you have a kid. but yeah, that was sort of what I thought was just fascinating was when players say they don't read the clips, they read the clips. So don't ever listen to them when they say they don't read them.
Josh, final question for you here. You've covered the NHL for a long time. You covered the Nashville Predators for a long time for the Tennessean newspaper. And now, of course, you're in California and you cover both the Kings and the Ducks. But when you look at this Western Conference, I think you'd agree that at the top you've got Winnipeg and Calgary, San Jose, and Vegas. But do you think Nashville is still in that upper tier? Or based on the way they've played this season, do you think that maybe their time has passed and they're no longer a Stanley Cup contender?
Oh, God, no. They are. I mean, look, all these teams are contenders. And every team you mentioned, I mean, do I think that the teams that you talked about are the favorites? For sure. But also, I mean, you definitely can't look past Nashville. They have so much talent. And I mean, they made the Cup final 2 years ago. They were the President's Trophy winners last year. They were the Western Conference regular season champions last year. That was a joke based off the banner that they have hanging in their building. So I don't think you can ever look past them. They're an excellent, excellent hockey club, very well coached, incredible amount of talent, great leadership. You know, I think they really came up big at the trade deadline. I think they fleeced a few teams, Minnesota specifically. And, you know, I like that group right now. I really do. I would actually look out for them as a dark horse right now in the West.
Josh, just quickly before we let you go, last time we had you on, we asked you to evaluate Snoop Dogg's play-by-play skills. Well, we need you once again. How could you evaluate Ron Burgundy's play-by-play skills?
Well, I jokingly said to the Kings, if Anchorman 3 gets made, it's because of you guys, just because of how viral that went. That was... you know, someone from the league said to me, you know, even though it hasn't been the best years on the ice for the Kings, they're certainly doing a great job off the ice. And these celebrities, you know, when they get it right, and they haven't gotten it right with everyone, though fortunately they haven't invited David Boreanaz or Cuba Gooding Jr. yet, which is the NHL's go-tos. But when they get it right with these celebrities, it's a really, really fun viral TV thing that happens.
Josh Cooper covers the NHL for theathletic.com. You can read his work there. Josh, be well. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks. Take care, guys.
Take care, Josh. When we come back, we preview tomorrow evening's Jets-Islanders game. You're listening to NHL This Week. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Three on the year now for Kuba. In front of it, rebound score! Scored in four straight games against the Islanders, and the Jets go bang bang and have a 2-1 lead.
Did I use that clip simply because Dennis says bang bang in it?
You're bang on.
You bet I did. Welcome back to NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Sean Assor with you in studio.
You bet your bang bang.
Yeah, you bet your bang bang. You bet your jet, of course, all week long. And then a special We Call You edition Saturday morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Right now you're listening to TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family owned and operated and has been serving quality home-style food since 1985. For a hot, fresh breakfast starting at 6:30 in the morning weekdays and all day long, visit Bernstein's Deli at 1700 Cordon Avenue in the Cordon Village Mall. And if you're so inclined, and we strongly recommend it, you know, the Winnipeg Free Press is doing their March Madness gimmick and doing it about breakfast restaurants in Winnipeg.
Yes, Bernstein's is in the L Eat.
Yes, which would be the Elite Eight otherwise, but the Elite Eight, I think, is what the Free Press is dubbed it. So go vote for Bernstein's Deli. My understanding is they are currently in the lead,
yep,
trying to move it on to the Final Four.
And while you're there, get yourself an Illegal Curve sandwich.
There you go. It sounds like all-around good ideas, if you ask me. The Jets and the Islanders tomorrow night at Bell MTS Place. The Jets looking to bounce back from their performance on Monday night.
Tough loss last night for the Islanders.
I'll be honest, I did not see much of it.
They lost 4-0 to Columbus, and that was a must-win game,
yes,
for Columbus.
Right.
And Columbus's next game is on Friday against Montreal.
No, it's tomorrow against Montreal.
Sorry, tomorrow against Montreal.
Yes, it's tomorrow against Montreal.
And Montreal, if they win that game, I believe will go up
If Montreal 4 points? If Montreal beats the Blue Jackets tomorrow night, they will be 4 points up on the Blue Jackets. If the Blue Jackets beat the Habs, they will be tied in points, but the Blue Jackets will have the tiebreaker by virtue of having more regulation and overtime wins. So that is an absolutely massive. It was a huge win for the Blue Jackets to stop the bleeding against the Islanders on Tuesday night, last night, and then tomorrow night, one of those games of the year as you circle on the calendar when you only have the Habs have 5 games left. The Blue Jackets have 6 games left. So they'll be, do battle in Columbus, I believe, tomorrow night, looking to battle for that final Eastern Conference playoff spot. The Jets have the Islanders at home, though. And these two teams, obviously, they met earlier in the year. We played the clip there. The Jets won it 3-1. I don't remember a ton from that game. Looking back when I was preparing for the show, I remember the Jets getting those two. It was a 0-0 game after 40 minutes. The Islanders opened the scoring in the third period, and the Jets responded with those two goals pretty shortly thereafter.
Yeah, the Jets went bang-bang.
They did go bang-bang, as you heard Dennis say, and then the Jets potted a goal, I think, in the last minute of the game as an insurance marker. So the Jets were victorious 3-1, and they do look like they need to have a better performance, and I would expect, frankly, a better performance tomorrow night than they saw on Monday night. Whatever you stock you want to put into the concept of the emotional letdown, that was 3 days ago now. The Jets have had Tuesday off. They had a good practice day today. I would expect to see a faster, more energetic, more lively, more committed Winnipeg Jets team tomorrow night.
Right. I expect a much better effort from the Jets, Drew, but I also expect a huge effort from the Islanders, because even though the Islanders are in third right now, they're tied with the Penguins, but they actually have a worse goal differential. They have the same amount of regulation wins with 40, but Pittsburgh's ahead in second. But not only can the Islanders catch Pittsburgh and then have home ice advantage against those same Penguins, they can still catch Washington. They're only three points back of Washington. So this is a huge game for the Islanders, not as big for the Jets, but because, as you mentioned, they didn't play very well against the Dallas Stars, you want to have a nice rebound game against the Islanders. So it should be an excellent game. This Islanders team has to be the surprise of the entire NHL. I think, Shawnee, you'd throw in the Carolina Hurricanes in there as well. But, you know, right now the Islanders, Andrew Ladd is out for the season now. Valtteri Filppula is going to miss the rest of the regular season. He's been a really nice addition. He's been the third line center. So you've really seen their center depth tested without Val Filppula in the lineup. But it's really been the story of goaltending and defense. The Islanders have allowed the least amount of goals, and Robin Lehner has just been probably the best bounce back story. And Thomas Greiss has also been excellent in net. So you've just had, you know, the best goaltending combination in the league. Plus, you've had a team that is just completely transformed under Barry Trotz, a much better defensive team. Last year, the Islanders were easy to play against. Barry Trotz has made them hard to play against. And even though the Islanders don't score a lot of goals, and, you know, after Matt Barzal, after Anders Lee, you know, after Josh Bailey, it really thins out because Jordan Eberle's not having a good year. He's only got 15 goals. He had 25 goals last year. Anders Lee had 40 last year. He's on pace for 30. Goal scoring is way down for the Islanders this year, but they're not that type of team. This is a very hard team to play against now. And even though you would say that, you know, they don't have a lot of superstars on their team, it's not a one-line team. Casey Zizekas has 19 goals. He's on the fourth line. So this isn't a Colorado situation or a Dallas situation where you've got one top line. I mean, this team does not score a lot of goals, but it wasn't designed to score a lot of goals on the top line. You no longer have John Tavares on your top line. So, as I mentioned, it's going to be a big test for the Jets. We know the Jets have risen to the occasion as of late against teams like the Nashville Predators, against the Tampa Bay Lightning. That was 2 games ago, but the point is they beat the Lightning earlier in the season. But this Islanders team, they're going to the playoffs. It's just a question of where they finish in that Metro division. I don't necessarily think they're going to catch Washington. I think they're probably going to be locked in to play Pittsburgh. Yeah. But home ice is key. So this is a very important 2 points for them.
It certainly is. I mean, if you look at the Islanders, you know, if you want to look at the possession numbers, it's interesting to note that of all the teams that are likely to be playoff bound in the NHL, the Islanders have the lowest 5-on-5 possession of all those teams. So you mentioned that, you know, how they don't score a ton of goals and the goals against is a huge driver for them. That's absolutely been the case.
Top in the league and allowing goals against
them and the Dallas Stars both tied at 188 goals allowed this season.
Well, I think if they play Pittsburgh, Drew, sorry to cut you off, I think Like, I'm taking Pittsburgh.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think there's a good matchup for the Islanders in the first round. I think they've been a great story, but if there's any team that is a candidate to regress, it's the Islanders.
There's no question it's the Islanders.
I'm not saying that they can't win. I'm just saying when you're going up against the Penguins, and the Penguins, I think, aren't being talked about enough for how well they've played in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at Jake Guentzel. He might end up with 50 goals by the time the season's over. Obviously, he's not. He's going to hit 40, but he's been incredible. We know that Sid the Kid and Malkin and Kessel and Letang, they always turn it up. Matt Murray has been fantastic. But if you're going up against the Pens, especially without home ice advantage,
yeah,
it's going to be tough for them.
I would absolutely. I don't know any team in the first round that the Islanders can realistically play and expect to be the favorite in. They've been a great story all year round, and you're absolutely right.
Maybe if they play Carolina in the first round, but that's not going to happen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, that would require...
I mean, it could happen, but it's...
Well, that would require Pittsburgh to basically lose out the rest of the regular season and Carolina to, you know, as a result, win, you know, I guess five
out of
the last...
pass Washington.
No, I'm saying that if Pittsburgh dropped into the wild card spot and Carolina went up into either the second or third spot, it could conceivably happen, more than likely than the Islanders passing Washington, I believe. In any event, it's not going to happen. The Islanders and the Penguins will likely meet in the first round, and that's not a good matchup for the Islanders as well at all. But before that, the Jets have to deal with them, and that's tomorrow night, a game where the Jets obviously will need to bounce back. They'll need to bring their best effort. They didn't bring it on Monday. Here's an opportunity to shake off the doldrums of that game and have a better performance. Only two games left on home ice, Monday and then Saturday night against the Montreal Canadiens, so you know that they should hope to want to put on a good performance in front of the hometown crowd. When we come back, we talk more about the New York Islanders. Earlier today, Ezzie sat down with Andrew Gross of Newsday Newspaper to talk about the Islanders with their beat writer. You're listening to NHL This Week. We'll bring you that interview up next on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
We're joined by Andrew Gross of Newsday on NHL This Week with Illegal Curve on TSN Radio 1290. Andrew, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. Always great to talk to you. How's everything?
Everything's going really well. You know, the Jets are first in the Central. They've clinched a playoff berth, and we're just gearing up for the playoffs.
Yeah, you know, it was funny. When I walked into the MTS Center for the Islanders practice this afternoon, I walked past Paul Maurice, you know, finishing up his practice presser, and... you know, everyone talks about Barry Trotz and, you know, how he's one of the Jack Adams candidates, and rightfully so. But, you know, boy, I mean, I don't know if Paul Maurice gets enough credit for the job he's done, you know, with this team this year. I mean, he's just always consistently one of the, you know, the top five coaches in the league, and quietly so. But, you know, a magnificent job and a really, really tough team to play against, as the Islanders found out earlier this season.
And Andrew, you mentioned Barry Trotz, and you recently wrote about Barry Trotz's sense of calm behind the bench and how it's had a tremendous impact on the Islanders this year. How much credit does Trotz deserve for the position that the Islanders are in right now?
I don't know how you quantify it. I mean, it is night and day, literally, from last season. And you know, before you praise Barry Trotz and his, you know, his staff, including, you know, he brings in Lane Lambert, his associate coach, and Mitch Korn, the director of goaltending from Washington. Lou Lamoriello brings in goalie coach Piero Greco, and, you know, John Gruden, the assistant, has done a good job. But before you get to the coaching staff, you know, I think Lou Lamoriello deserves a lot of credit for coming in here and just, you know, turning the organization, you know, on its heels that quickly and really, you know, instilling a sense of accountability. I'm not just talking about, like, the players, just throughout the organization. And, you know, this will sound harsh, you know, compared to the past management, But the team's being run in a very, very professional manner now. And, you know, and Barry certainly deserves a large amount of the credit because, you know, Lou comes in and then Barry comes in. And what both of them are talking about is the need to fix the defense. But they were very confident that it could be a very easy fix. And, you know, if you watch the Islanders last season, it was a gong show. You know, they give up 293 goals, which is not only the worst in the league, it's the worst in the league for, you know, 10 calendar years, I believe it was. And they've got a very good chance of leading the league this season in allowing the fewest goals. So I don't know if that's ever been done, you know, going from worst to first like that. And it all starts with the defense. Because they're playing solid defense, the goaltending can be better, because the goaltenders don't have to read, you know, four, five, six different options and face a million odd man rushes, you know, in a track meet of a game. It's very, very controlled. And, you know, and that's probably not crediting Robin Lehner and Thomas Greiss enough for how well they've played and prepared this season. But, you know, so it's like a jigsaw puzzle. You know, you can't have one thing without the other, but it's all fit together really, really nicely for this team.
You reported yesterday that Andrew Ladd will be out 5 months with an ACL injury. Just how difficult of a season has it been for the former Jets captain, because he missed 3 months earlier this season with a separate leg injury?
Yeah, and it started, I think it was the second day of training camp, it might have been, or maybe it was even the first, you know, full day on ice. But Andrew Ladd gets out there, skates for 10 minutes on the practice rink and turns right around, and you didn't see him for the rest of the preseason. And he also missed the first three games of the regular season. They called it tightness. And, you know, the suspicion is when you say tightness, it's probably, you know, tied into the back issues he had last season a little bit. And, you know, so any player will tell you when they miss the whole preseason that you're really running at a deficit there in terms of getting, you know, your game to where it needs to be for a long NHL season. So, I mean, he was behind the proverbial eight ball to start with, and then he misses, you know, it's a 44-game stretch with a right leg injury, and he comes back right after the trade deadline, and Lou Lamoriello says, well, you know, these, you know, basically says these are a trade day acquisitions, which is Andrew Ladd and defenseman Thomas Hickey also came off long-term injured reserve. You know, he had a upper body believed to be a head injury that kept him out since December. And, you know, ironically now, you know, Hickey's been a healthy scratch again. I think it's the last two, three games with Johnny Boychuk back in the lineup. And now, you know, you really have to wonder about Andrew Ladd's, you know, not only his, you know, future for this season, which it's, you know, he's going to undergo surgery this week, and that's his season ending. But, you know, how does he fulfill this contract, which still has, what, I think it's four seasons to go? I mean, he's got two bad knees now. That's not easy to play on in this league.
We're joined by Andrew Gross of Newsday on NHL This Week on TSN Radio 1290. The Jets and Islanders meet tomorrow night at Bell MTS Place. And Michael Dal Colle was in the lineup last night in that loss to the Columbus Blue Jackets. He was a healthy scratch for eight straight games, and he ostensibly replaces Andrew Ladd in the lineup. Do the Islanders still think that Dal Colle can be a top six forward?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, he's certainly getting the chance. You know, he's not the fastest skater in the league, never will be, but, you know, he's learning more and more how to be positionally sound, and he's such a strong body. I would think when it all shakes out, you know, given, you know, his production, which is not, you know, at a top six level at the NHL, and it hasn't been, I would think he's more of a, you know, maybe a third line, you know, top nine type of guy. But on the other hand, he's got good hands, and, you know, he's very strong. If he gets to the crease, you know, he can pound in some. So, you know, it's a matter of, you know, taking this opportunity and I would say running with it, but skating with it, really. You know, he was a healthy scratch for those eight games, and, you know, it was more, as Barry Trotz explained, you know, Tom Kuhnhackl was in, Andrew Ladd was in. It was more about the fact that Dal Colle was not playing on the penalty kill, and Trotz really needed, you know, six solid forwards he could count on in the penalty kill. And if Del Col's not going to do that, you know, Trotz, you know, just couldn't, you know, make it work to get him in the lineup. But, you know, Valtteri Filppula is out through the end of the regular season and probably, you know, midway through the first round at least now with, you know, suspected left shoulder injury. And, you know, and now Ladd's out. So Del Col is certainly going to get his chance and probably get some special teams time down the road as well.
We're joined by Andrew Gross of Newsday on NHL This Week on TSN Radio 1290. And as you know, there's a lot of talk surrounding Islanders captain Anders Lee these days. He's a pending unrestricted free agent. And even though his offensive totals have gone down from last season, his plus minus has actually gone from a minus 25 last year to a plus 17 this year. Have you seen him transform into a better all-around player under Barry Trotz? And what do you think the chances are that he's going to sign that long-term contract with the Islanders?
I think everyone's expectations from, you know, Anders' side to the Islanders' side is this gets done. And, you know, I know the Islanders have been down this path with a captain pretty recently, and it didn't work out so well for him. But I wouldn't put Anders Lee in the John Tavares boat right now. I do think both sides realize that this is a really good fit, and Anders' best place is probably with the Islanders. And at the end of the day, yeah, I think he's going to get his term and his money from the Islanders. You know, is he a better player? I would say Barry Trotz across the board has made everyone a better player. Because there's more emphasis on being responsible defensively, more so than in the past. And, you know, Anders was always pretty good at that just because he is, you know, a big body. But, you know, one player, it's a five-man unit, and, you know, one guy can't be playing defense well and the other four not, and have that one guy make such an impact. Yeah, his numbers are down a little bit. Obviously, he broached, you know, the 40-goal mark last season for the first time, and he's at 27 here with five games to go. But, you know, I don't really see it as a dip in production. I just think the whole team has been more efficient in the way they play. And, yeah, they're not scoring as many goals, but they kind of don't have to. You know, last year they had to beat you 6-5. Now they can beat you 2-1, you know, 3-2. And Anders is just fitting really well into the team philosophy that way.
Andrew, we're obviously a Winnipeg-based hockey show, so we have to ask you about Ryan Pollock. He grew up nearby in Grandview, Manitoba, and this is, of course, his second full NHL season, and he has a career-high 33 points already. Has he turned into the team's best defenseman under Trotz?
He's right there. I mean, I think he's the most consistent guy amongst the six. If you ask Barry Trotz, and we have, Barry Trotz will still tell you, you know, Nick Leddy is the best defenseman in the group, you know, for his more of his veteran savvy. And you talk about a guy who's turned around his plus minus, that would be Nick Leddy, since he was a minus 42 last year. And, you know, that he can't be worse than that. But, you know, as far as Pulak is concerned, he's developing into, you know, he's not technically on a top pair. He's paired with Adam Pellick, and, you know, whatever partner Nick Leddy has tends to be really the top pair. And right now that's Johnny Boychuk. But Pulak, you just see Pulak's, you know, the confidence he plays with this season is light years ahead of what he was doing last season. You know, especially, you know, in the earlier months last season. Towards the end, he was kind of playing much better, and he, you know, brought that through the summer. And, you know, he's very solid in his own end, you know, and he's a huge body, and he protects the crease really, really well. And then up ice, you know, sometimes the Islanders seem a little hesitant to shoot, but I've never seen any hesitancy in Ryan Pulak. He just unleashes some bombs. He's got one of the hardest shots in the NHL, and as of late, he's been more accurate getting it on the crease. Well, his problem earlier in the year was he would unleash these bombs, but they were ineffective because they were banging off the glass and going the other way. And now he's gotten better at getting it towards the crease and maybe getting a deflection off of it. No, I think his future with the Islanders is incredibly bright, and that's what they expected when they drafted him so high.
Andrew, you mentioned Robin Lehner earlier, and he's obviously had an incredible bounce-back season, but Thomas Greiss has been just as good playing a similar amount of games. How important do you think it is going into the playoffs, especially if you face a team like the Pittsburgh Penguins in the first round, how important is it to have two strong goaltenders in case one of those goaltenders falters early in the first round?
Well, yeah, I mean, you bring up the Penguins, and obviously, you know, Matt Murray showed that a couple of seasons ago when he stepped in for Marc-Andre Fleury and led him to a cup. Barry has not said this is our number one guy all season. It's been, you know, maybe Robin gets, you know, more games in this stretch, and then Thomas gets a few more games in that stretch, and Robin's dealt with some minor injuries. You know, I think it's three times a season where he's, you know, the reins have had to be pulled back because he wasn't at 100%. I suspect when the season, when the postseason starts, I suspect Robin Lehner will get game one, but, you know, I wouldn't guarantee that because Barry has shown no hesitancy in going with either guy. And I do think it keeps opponents guessing at times as to which guy they're going to face on a given night. And, you know, Thomas Greiss, and I mentioned this earlier, you know, he's not seeing two, you know, five, six different options, but he also worked, he was embarrassed by the way he played last season, and he worked very, very hard this offseason. You know, he's kind of a quiet, he's a very laid-back guy, he never seeks the spotlight, or he doesn't take a lot of credit onto himself. You know, he always says, oh, a lot of luck. He gets some bounces here and there. But he's, you know, when the Islanders were in the playoffs 2015, 2016, he saw the bulk of the action, and he's playing back to that, being that type of goalie this season.
Andrew Gross used to cover the New York Rangers, then he covered the New Jersey Devils for the Bergen Record, and now he covers the New York Islanders for Newsday. The New York Islanders tied with the Pittsburgh Penguins for second place in the Metropolitan Division. The Jets and the Islanders meet tomorrow night at 7 o'clock at Bell MTS Place. Andrew, thanks so much for making time for us today, and we look forward to seeing you tomorrow night at the rink.
Yeah, no, that'll be great. Look forward to you know, chatting with you in person, and thanks for having me on.
Right. Thanks again. Take care. We're going to head to break now. You're listening to NHL This Week on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
You have to meet in the middle somewhere, and they finally did. And I think it was clearly important for Tampa and for John Cooper not to have this hang over the playoffs like it did a year ago for Washington and Barry Trotz. And by the way, for everyone to say that it didn't affect Washington because they ultimately won the cup anyway, well, it did. They lost Barry Trotz. So this was important for both sides. Now, no details released as to what he's making now. His current salary is $2.25 million on his expiring deal. I've talked to some people in the NHL coaching fraternity who believe that his deal is worth north of $3.5 million a year, which would put him among the top six or seven paid coaches in the National Hockey League.
That's TSN Hockey Insider Pierre LeBrun talking about the new contract signed by Tampa Bay Lightning head coach John Cooper.
Coach Cooper getting paid.
Yes, you can hang with Mr. Cooper and not have to pick up a bill for a little while. Welcome back to NHL This Week. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Sean Assor, Ezra Ginsberg with you on this Wednesday evening. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction for all your real estate needs. Come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Surprised it took this long, I guess, to get it done. That, you know, you never know, the longer it goes, maybe Cooper decides he wants to check out the open market, but obviously he didn't in this instance. To me, though, Ezzy, you know, the number we just heard Pierre LeBrun talking about, you know, $3-plus million per season, putting him among the top six NHL head coaches, strikes me as a little low. John Cooper is a guy who I would put, you know, in one, probably top two, top three coaches in the league, and he's only getting paid as one of the top five or top six coaches, strikes me that, you know, maybe he's a little underappreciated as a head coach on a tremendous hockey team. There's got to be, you got a lot of talent, but there's got to be something to be said for the job he's done.
Right, and I don't buy the argument that, well, he's got all of these talented players like Steven Stamkos, Nikita Kucherov, Victor Hedman, Braden Point. I mean, it goes on and on and on. I really don't buy that. He is an excellent coach, and, you know, 59 wins is really incredible. The fact that the Tampa Bay Lightning even have a shot at the Detroit Red Wings 62-win record is just ridiculous. I mean, they're going to hit 60 wins easily, but it's just really unheard of in the day and age of the three-point games, right? I mean, you just don't expect to see, you expect to see teams with 50 or 52 wins like the Jets had last year, or 53 and 54 like Nashville, but to be at 60 wins, 61 wins, they might end up at 62 wins even.
It could end up remarkable. 64 where they have five games left.
So in that sense, I mean, you know, maybe he is underappreciated or underpaid. Maybe, you know, he should be getting that Mike Babcock, Joel Quenneville type of money, but I think this was a really smart decision by Julien Brisebois and the Lightning management to get this done before the playoffs start, because we remember what was hanging over the head of the Washington Capitals and specifically Barry Trotz, of those questions. So why let it be a topic at all, right? You know that this Lightning team is going to go deep this year, or they should go deep. I mean, stranger things have happened, guys. They could get knocked out in the first or second round.
They could lose to Boston in the second round by virtue of the fact that, you know, it's a hell of a second round matchup. Right.
But the point is, they're a 60-win team this year, or 59, but we expect them to be at the very least a 60-plus win team. And the point is, this team is going to be a contender for many years to come. Yes, they have to sign Braden Point to his second contract, but when you're talking about Stamkos and Kucherov, Hedman, you know, Vasilevsky, I mean, these guys are all in their prime. It's not like the Lightning are going to lose a bunch of their players. Sure, they might lose a couple of defensemen. They might lose guys like, you know, Dan Girardi or Braden Coburn, but the point is,
they're not going anywhere.
This team's going to be a contender for the very least, at least the next 3 or 4 years. So John Cooper is going to be a huge part of that. And if you know that the Lightning are going to be good and you know that you like the way John Cooper coaches this team, why wouldn't you sign him to an extension? I think this was really smart to get this done now.
Longest tenured head coach in Lightning history. He's been there since March 2013. He has a career record of 302, 157, and 44 since taking over behind the Lightning bench. And he's the franchise's all-time leader in wins with 301. I mean, this is a guy who is bona fide, speak for themselves based on how the team's performance. To me, he's one of the best coaches in the league.
Well, and he's also a great story, right? He had, you know, he rose up through the ranks from the United States Hockey League. But before Syracuse, he won the Calder Championship with Norfolk.
Yeah.
But then before that, he started in the USHL with the Green Bay Gamblers. I mean, this is a guy.
He's a lawyer by trade.
He's a lawyer by trade.
Yeah. But I mean, this is a guy that.
Smart guy.
That became a coach because of, you know, circumstances. Someone asked him to be a head coach at a lower level. So this wasn't a guy that was a coach, you know, from his early 20s on, like Paul Maurice, right? Because Paul Maurice was an assistant coach in the Ontario Hockey League, and then he became obviously the youngest ever NHL coach. But this was a guy that became a head coach later on in life. And, you know, he's turned into, as you mentioned, one of the best coaches. If he's not top three, you know, he might even be the best coach in the NHL right now. I personally think it's Barry Trotz, but Cooper is right up there with Barry Trotz and, you know, all of those other top coaches.
Yeah, this is also a guy that, you know, rose through the ranks of the AHL with the Tampa Bay's Farm Club and molded a lot of these star players. I mean, Nikita Kucherov spent some time in the AHL, Tyler Johnson, Alex Killorn, Andre Palat. These guys, he brought these guys along, these core pieces of the Tampa Bay Lightning that are so valuable to this team. John Cooper molded a lot of these players, and just you look at the identity now, and he's done a tremendous job, and I do agree, Drew. I think it's a little low.
Yeah, to me, he should be getting, you know, Quenneville money. We expect that when Joel Quenneville takes his next job, you know, he's going to get $5-6 million a year, somewhere, you know, a little bit less than what Mike Babcock's currently making, although, you know, Babcock has not done, in my estimation, a very good job behind the bench for the Leafs this season. But if, you know, if Quenneville's going to be the second highest paid head coach, or Trotz is already the second highest paid head coach, I'm not sure why John Cooper is that far behind them. I think he should be upwards of closer to $5 million than say the $3 million that it sounds like he's going to make. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Paul Gackle, talk about the San Jose Sharks. Paul is, of course, with the San Jose Mercury News. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Wednesday evening, welcome back to the show. Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, Sean Asor with you. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. You can reach us here in studio at Illegal Curve. And, of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the San Jose Mercury News, he covers the San Jose Sharks. We're pleased to welcome back to the program Winnipeg's own Paul Gackle. Paul, good evening, and thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Hey, can I give a shout out to, I want to wish luck to the Rock Voisins. They're playing in the final of the Mixed Curling League Championships at the Granite Club on Friday. So be thinking about them in a couple nights.
Well, you know, now that you've started off with curling, I actually used to play in that same league as the Rock Voisins. My wife and I were part of Win, Loser, Drew, and we had more than one epic battle with the Rock Voisins on a Friday night where we also may have been tipping back a few beverages. So, yes, good luck to the boys. My wife and I no longer play in that league. Unfortunately, our kids have sort of gone the way there, but they're a good group of guys, and it'll be a good battle on Friday night. What are they in, the Division E or the Division F finals in that league?
Well, that's a little beyond my level of expertise. We'll have to turn it back to San Jose Sharks hockey.
You didn't think I had a retort for you off the start there. You didn't think I had any connection there.
Yeah, Paul, how is Drew going to segue out of this one?
There you go. Anyways, Paul, obviously we brought you on to talk about the San Jose Sharks and not the mixed curling scene here in Winnipeg. I want to start with Drew Doughty's comments from earlier this week. He, you know, certainly was vocal in some of his comments about both Brent Burns and Erik Karlsson. How did those comments go over in the Sharks dressing room?
Well, publicly, you know, the San Jose Sharks took the high road and, you know, Brent Burns kind of brushed it aside and you know, complimented Mark Giordano, which is the right thing to do. And Pete DeBoer just said, you know, that players should comment on worry about their own games and not comment on other players. So the Sharks, you know, they're in the 6-game losing streak right now. I think the last thing that they want to do is end up in some sort of, you know, Twitter war controversy with Drew Doughty, whose team is long out of it. But, you know, just knowing the room and the people and the guys in the room, you know, I'm sure that, you know, they know what Brent Burns brings to this team. And, you know, nobody's going to look at him and say he's a defensive-minded specialist like a Mark Edward Vlasic or anything like that. But he is deceptively strong in some defensive areas. You know, he's always on the ice during the penalty kill. There's a reason for that. He has, you know, a huge wingspan. He's a big guy. He's very good with his stick, knocks a lot of pucks away and things like that. So I would think if you got the San Jose Sharks in an honest mood about this topic, there would be a more nuanced discussion.
Well, Paul, we have to ask you about Erik Karlsson. You tweeted out earlier today, he was only on the ice for 15 minutes, but you tweeted out that you're not a groin specialist, so you're not going to go into too much detail about Erik Karlsson's 15 minutes of skating, but he hasn't played since late February, and I guess what everybody wants to know is Erik Karlsson going to be healthy enough for the start of the first round of the playoffs? Maybe not at 100%, but is he going to be ready to go once the puck drops for that first round?
Well, the word from Erik Karlsson when we talked to him a couple weeks ago was he said 100% he'll be ready for the playoffs. He left no wiggle room there whatsoever, and the Sharks continue to back up that statement. So it does sound like you're going to see Erik Karlsson on the ice, you know, come game one on April 11th or April 10th or whenever that falls. To me, the bigger question, the questions are we going to see him beforehand? Does he get two or three games to tune his game up? Because, shoot, a man, you know, you haven't been on the ice since February 26th, and to jump into NHL action, you know, right there in the Stanley Cup playoffs at its most intense moment against a team that has as much speed as the Vegas Golden Knights, you know, that could spell trouble. So is he going to get an opportunity to, you know, dip his toes in the water first and get a couple tune-up games next week. I'm expecting that. I have no, you know, official word on that whatsoever, but that's always been my feeling after he resuffered that groin injury in Boston, was that they would probably shut him down all the way till about the last week of the season, then give him a couple games to get the feel back. And then the even bigger question is, you know, how healthy can he possibly be? What is healthy when you're talking about a groin issue? I mean, this is so, this isn't like or similar in any way to the hairline fractures that Carlson had in his foot that he played through in 2017, you know, and he took them to within a goal of the Stanley Cup final. Muscle injuries are just a completely different animal altogether, and that's the type of thing, and that's where I think he's gotten in trouble with this, is thinking, you know what, feels pretty good, I can go out and play. Turns out you can't. So, you know, does he get on the ice there in the playoffs or whenever it is and find that he ends up in another tweak situation, you know, two or three games in, and then, you know, what happens from that point? You know, is a month enough time to heal whatever is going on with this groin? You know, only the people who have really had a look at this, you know, might know, but as you see in the NFL so often, as you see in the NHL, these are the type of injuries where they often do shut guys down for like 8 to 10 weeks, and there's a reason. They really do nag at you and can be very easily re-aggravated.
Paul Gackel is our guest on NHL This Week. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Paul covers the San Jose Sharks for the San Jose Mercury News.
Yeah, Paul, you mentioned the 6-game losing streak. I'm just curious, have you noticed any, you know, trends that are concerning, or is this just a team that's maybe let their foot off the gas a little bit as they prep for a very important playoff run?
Well, I think the big trends, honestly, to begin with, are just the injuries finally, you know, added up and caught up with the Sharks. You know, obviously, you know, Erik Karlsson, we know what he is, and a 2-time Norris Trophy winner, but they've gone to the second round of the playoffs last year without him, so that isn't an injury you can absorb. But then you lose Radim Šimek up there in Winnipeg, actually, and, you know, that ends up being a bigger injury than I think people realize, because he is Brent Burns' defensive partner. Around these parts, they call that role the Wookiee Whisperer. And, you know, I really think that Burns is a really unique player, and it takes a certain type to really gel with him. And Šimek really had just, even though he's a rookie out of the Czech Liga, spent the year down in the minor leagues, he really, as soon as he stepped into that lineup for the Sharks on December 2nd, you know, they took off, and he just had a sixth sense for being able to read what Brent Burns was able to do. There was a play in Anaheim on Friday, the first goal, where Burns tried to do a little too much and stick handle through the neutral zone, coughed it up, all of a sudden it's an odd man rush the other way. And I just feel like, you know, a couple weeks ago when Šimek was in the lineup, you know, he'd have been in the right spot and broken that up, and we wouldn't have even noticed it. So you take that chess piece off the board, that's a pretty big deal. The Sharks are 31-9-3 with Šimek in the lineup. They're now 0-5-1 without him. So that's a big loss. Then Joe Pavelski's missed 4 in a row. He's probably expected to rejoin the lineup tomorrow night. Logan Couture missed a game with the flu in Los Angeles last week and has been probably at about 50%. You know, Pete DeBoer acknowledged this morning, and, you know, I just talked to him for a separate story I was doing this morning, and his voice still having a tough time pushing those words out. So, I mean, you take a Norris Trophy winner off the board. You take your Brent Burns, the guy who stabilizes Brent Burns. Your captain is a 30-goal scorer, you know, a Team Canada World Cup center. You know, those injuries start to add up sooner or later and can, you know, be tough to absorb. Then in addition to that, I think as the losses start to mount, and this is a team that's, you know, trying to play its best hockey and chase down Calgary to avoid that first round series with the Vegas Golden Knights, you know, then the team starts to squeeze the stick a little bit. And I think we saw that a little bit against that in that loss to Detroit the other night, where, you know, they're creating some offense, but maybe trying to be a little too fine in some areas. So, you know, assuming they get Pavelski back tomorrow, Logan Couture getting healthier by the day, Carlson on the horizon, you're going to have to make do without Šimek. But I expect them to turn this thing around before the end of the season. Just unfortunate for them that it's probably, this little dip here is probably going to cost them a chance at the top seed in the Western Conference, which really has some ramifications, especially when you're bringing back Carlson into the lineup. You know, I think you'd like to give him, you know, a tune-up series against a wild card team like the Colorado Avalanche or the Minnesota Wild or the Phoenix Coyotes in the first round, possibly get him some rest if he can, you know, get out of that first round in 4 or 5 games. Instead, you're looking at going right into the maybe the most heated battle you could have against the Golden Knights and having him catch up to speed there. So losing that top seed, you know, that could really end up coming back to haunt the Sharks. But you know, I wouldn't look at this 6-game losing streak and go, oh my God, this team's a disaster going into the playoffs.
Paul Gackel's our guest on NHL This Week. Paul covers the San Jose Sharks for the San Jose Mercury News. And Paul, you mentioned that it's more than likely the Sharks and the Golden Knights will meet in the first round of the playoffs. Golden Knights, the Sharks have won a game against the Golden Knights this year, but the Golden Knights have also handled the Sharks a couple of times pretty significantly. Is this a bad matchup for the Sharks entering the playoffs, or do you think that the regular season results won't have any effect or any impact on the postseason chances?
Well, I do think it is a really tough matchup for the Sharks. And to tell you the truth, the Sharks, that game that they did, where they did go down to Vegas and win on January 10th, you know, Vegas was undoubtedly the better team that night. And that was a 36-save performance on 38 shots for Martin Jones. They were able to sneak that one out. And when you look at that matchup and the issues there, you know, it does start in the goal crease. I'll get back to that here in a minute. You know, the Sharks have had a real tough time handling that top line of the Golden Knights with Riley Smith, Jonathan Marchessault, and William Karlsson. I think they have 53 combined points against the Sharks in 13 games. So it just seems like the Vegas Golden Knights are always a step ahead of the Sharks. They're making the Sharks think faster than they want to on the ice. And these little mistakes, it always seems like that line seems to be getting these odd man rushes and they bury every chance. I think Jets fans listening out there can probably relate because it was a similar story in the Western Conference Final last year. But and you take that advantage up there on the top line, and now you're, you know, throwing in a second line where you have, you know, Paul Stastny, Max Pacioretty, and Mark Stone, and, you know, really looking like a bona fide shutdown line with, you know, a trio of guys that can put the puck in 25 plus times a year. So, you know, that makes them very formidable. You know, you got that lightning quick first line and then a defensive shutdown line. But then back to the goaltending, I think that when you look at that matchup, you know, that's really, you know, the area where I think you say, you know, you go down the lineup between these two teams, it's pretty even. But when you get into the goal crease, that's what really tips the scale in the Golden Knights direction. You know, we all know Marc-Andre Fleury's accolades. We all saw what he did in the playoffs last year. And then you put him up against, you know, Martin Jones, who's really struggling this year, you know, still with a sub-900 save percentage. The San Jose Sharks ranked dead last in the entire National Hockey League in save percentage. That becomes really problematic when, you know, we know these playoff games are there's going to be so many one-goal games. The margin of error is so fine. But then you wonder, is the great equalizer in this whole thing now the fact that Marc-Andre Fleury sidelined by a lower body injury himself? And when I think goalies and I think lower body injuries, I think groins and possibly knees. So if we're talking about Erik Karlsson and how healthy can he really be with a groin injury going into the playoffs, sure makes you wonder about Marc-Andre Fleury and if he's either not playing or not at 100%, then that advantage that the Golden Knights have in the goal crease suddenly gets negated, as well as Malcolm Subban's playing. You know, I don't want to take anything away from him. He looked darn good out here in San Jose last week. But Martin Jones is a guy who has gone to the Stanley Cup final. He has posted a .926 save percentage in 42 career playoff games. So he knows how to elevate at this time of year. He knows how to perform under pressure. Less certain about that when it comes to Malcolm Subban. So it'll be really interesting to watch those two injuries, Erik Karlsson, Marc-Andre Fleury, as we head toward the series.
Paul, last question for you here. And we know that the Sharks are led offensively by Brent Burns, Joe Pavelski, Logan Couture, Tomas Hertl. But defensively, a guy that I never think gets talked about enough is Brendan Dillon. He leads the Sharks with a +17 plus minus. And I realize that plus minus is a flawed statistic, but I do think there is still some validity to that. And this is a guy who's played every single game for the Sharks this year, and he's been so dependable for Pete DeBoer. So why don't more people talk about how good of a season he's having and how good of a defenseman Brendan Dillon really is?
Well, that's a great point, you know, and yeah, I think plus minus is a flawed statistic, but when you're consistently in the plus margin of that stat. I think that that can be telling. And what's so impressive about that is it's not like you can just say, hey, Brendan Dillon's, you know, playing with X player and he's riding their coattails to this plus 17. He's really been all over the board this year. He started off, you know, with Justin Braun down in a third pairing role. Then things weren't working between Mark-Edward Vlasic and Erik Karlsson, and he jumped up and started skating with Erik Karlsson when Erik Karlsson was playing well, and then goes back down into the Justin Braun role, getting some time here with Brent Burns right now. So he has that Swiss Army knife element too, where you can put him with pretty much anybody on the Sharks blue line, and he's seen some success. He's a big physical guy, but he's put a lot of work over the last couple of years into his skating, so he's added a lot of mobility to his game. But you probably just don't know him because offensively, you know, he's not a guy who's gonna wow you or anything. You know, he only has, I believe, one goal on the season. He's not gonna light up the stat sheet. And a lot of times when it's, you know, it's those plays, it's the, you know, the puck retrieval play that you go and you pick the puck off the wall and you make that first good pass out of the zone. You know, that can have such an impact on your team when you have a defenseman. He can go back there and make that play or, you know, close the neutral zone gap or, you know, have a nicely timed pinch in the offensive zone. Those things just, you know, don't show up on the stat sheet. One thing about our game is that we oftentimes, you know, we don't have a lot of great numbers to tell the story of some of these smaller detailed plays that, you know, can really help a team win hockey games at the end of the day. You know, I covered a lot of baseball in my life, and there's a number that you can find to coincide with anything. But, you know, in hockey, we don't have this guy's, you know, 84% on the first pass out of the zone or whatever. So it gets harder to tell those stories and, you know, be able to highlight why a player like Brendan Dillon has been so effective for the Sharks this season. But you're right. He has been a huge part of this blue line that's been in flux with the injuries and the uncertainty around Erik Karlsson. He's been a rock for them.
The Stanley Cup playoffs start 2 weeks from tonight, and much like the curling team that we started this interview with, Paul will be hurry hard for the San Jose Mercury News covering the Sharks playoff run. Paul, thanks for joining us this evening.
Thanks for having me on. Go Rock Lazine.
Take care, Paul. When we come back, one final segment. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
I hate to put it this way, but you said the last thing you can have is a bad week. You just had a bad week. So can you underscore what Tuesday is all about, and then Colorado, and then Minnesota? It's right there in front of you.
Yeah, we can't look at our schedule. We just got to look at the next game, Chicago. That's it. We got 2 days to prepare. Get to figure out a couple of things. Try to loosen up a couple of guys. But, yeah, we can't think about our schedule. We just got to think about Chicago. We got to keep the energy up.
Arizona Coyotes head coach Rick Tocchet talking after the Coyotes had lost four games in a row as they went on an Eastern Conference road trip this late in the season. They lost four games that they needed. They came back to win against Chicago, so they are still in the hunt for the final Western Conference wild card spot. Welcome back to NHL This Week. One final segment for you on this Wednesday evening. It's brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. For a list of performers and showtimes or to purchase tickets, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. So the reason I play that clip is because Ray Ferraro, you know, had some interesting comments about the Coyotes' Eastern Conference road trip, saying that it was absolutely ridiculous that the NHL schedules a Western Conference team, a Pacific time zone team, as the Coyotes now are, given that they don't change for daylight savings time, to go all the way out east at this time of the season. And he thinks the NHL needs to change their schedule to make it mostly in time zone and in conference from March 1st onwards. Your thoughts on that? Should the games be in conference, in time zone as much as possible from March 1 till the end of the regular season?
I'll be honest with you, Drew. It's not something that I've ever really thought about. But
yeah, until I saw Ray's tweets.
And it's interesting, and it makes a lot of sense if you're a coach of a team for travel. I mean, you don't want to be traveling from one coast to the other. You certainly don't want to be playing, if you can avoid it, mm-hmm. in the opposite conference, right? So it makes a lot of sense why you would finish the season in your own conference, and it also bodes well for rivalries. We know that the NHL is all about rivalries. They want to see mm-hmm. the good games, the meaningful games at the end of the season. I just don't know if you can do that logistically, and I think you would have to have the buy-in, obviously, from the board of governors and the general managers. The NHLPA would have to be on board, but it's certainly something that's been brought up by Ray Ferraro that a lot of people haven't brought up in the past, and you know, it certainly makes a lot of sense when you see how crazy some of these schedules are.
That's it for this Wednesday edition of NHL This Week. A big thank you to all our guests, Paul Gackle of the San Jose Mercury News. We are joined by Josh Cooper and Andrew Gross. In case you missed any of that, it's available for download on tsn1290.ca and on our website, illegalcurve.com. Subscribe where you get your podcast. Get it sent to your device automatically each and every week. For Ezra Ginsberg, for Sean Assor, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Thanks for listening to NHL This Week, live on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.